Today we are examining The Practice of Coherence, a manuscript exploring how complex systems fail through progressive structural drift, and how operators can navigate this blindness using early warning proxies and minimal intervention. So jumping right in, let's talk about the physical layout of the text, because the visual formatting here makes a really aggressive first impression.
It really does, yeah. And look, the highly stylized stanza-like formatting of the prose risks diluting the operational density of the framework for a professional or academic audience.
Right.
Because the core weakness here is how these really short, isolated sentences, while they do build this kind of dramatic suspense, they actively fracture complex, interdependent concepts.
Yeah, like the author is constantly dropping these single lines like, the system is not blind, it is misaligned.
Exactly. And I mean, it reads beautifully. It's almost like a manifesto or, you know, a really high-end slide deck. But it fundamentally strips away the rigorous operational weight that you actually need for a systemic manual.
Well, wait, I want to challenge that right out of the gate, because we have to consider the environment of the embedded operator, right?
Okay, sure.
If I am this understaffed, completely fatigued system manager, I don't necessarily want to trudge through dense, academic block text.
Yeah, that's fair.
These punchy single-line drops make the manuscript highly accessible. It gives intellectual breathing room, I guess. So aren't we risking alienating the exact audience the author's trying to reach if we demand denser formatting?
I mean, accessibility is super important, but not at the cost of conceptual integrity. Because when you isolate every single thought onto its own line, you artificially sever the relationships between the variables.
Sever the relationships? Okay, what do you mean by that?
So take the author's triadic structure: constraints, margins, and disturbances.
Right.
A complex system functions exclusively through the tension between those three things. If a disturbance hits, the margin absorbs it, up to the limit of the constraint.
Right. They all rely on each other.
Exactly. So if you format the prose so that constraints live on one line, margins on the next, and disturbances on a third, you are visually teaching the reader that these are independent variables. And they aren't.
Oh, wow. Okay, so the physical format of the text is actually contradicting its central thesis.
Yes.
Like the book is about deep interconnectedness, but it's visually organized like, I don't know, like trying to understand a complex web by looking at one isolated thread at a time.
Precisely. Which leads directly into the solution here. We need to consolidate these fragmented thoughts into cohesive, robust paragraphs that visually and structurally mirror the deep interconnectedness of the complex systems being described.
Form echoing function.
Right. Complex systems require complex interwoven prose.
Let's ground that really quick with the section on perceptual failure, because honestly, that is easily one of the most compelling parts of the manuscript.
Oh, absolutely.
The author outlines three distinct modes, right? Capacity failure, where the system literally just lacks the physical sensor to see a disturbance. Interpretive failure, where it has the sensor but misreads the signal. And suppression, where the system sees the signal but actively refuses to acknowledge it.
Because doing so carries too much institutional cost.
Right.
Exactly.
And right now, those sit on isolated, very dramatic lines.
And here is a concrete example of how consolidating them totally transforms the reading experience. Instead of isolating those definitions, combine them into a single comparative paragraph.
Because otherwise you lose the friction.
Exactly. You lose the friction and the causal chain between them. Like suppression doesn't just spontaneously generate out of thin air, right?
Right. It evolves.
It is a structural, organizational evolution of an interpretive failure. So by forcing them into the same paragraph, the prose naturally has to explore the nuanced ways one failure mode bleeds into the next.
I love that. A paragraph is, in itself, a complex adaptive system.
Oh, that's a great way to put it.
The sentences rely on each other. They share margin. They constrain each other.
Exactly. You maintain the author's clear intent and voice, but you elevate the scholarly weight. You force the sentences to interact, which proves to the reader how capacity failure masks interpretive failure.
Right.
This is just one approach to solving the formatting issue, of course. But the ultimate key is ensuring the visual structure matches the intellectual depth.
It forces the author to weave the concepts rather than just listing them. And, you know, that concept of structural interconnectedness actually serves as a perfect lens for the macro level of the book.
Oh, definitely.
Let's talk about the cross-domain validation chapters. because the author introduces this brilliant early warning diagnostic tool, the altimeter.
Right, the core framework.
Yeah, and tests it across three distinct domains. So we get clinical medicine in Chapter 7, wastewater infrastructure in Chapter 8, and economics in Chapter 9.
Yeah, and looking at those chapters, the rigid structural repetition across the cross-domain validation chapters creates a cyclical reading experience that severely limits the momentum of the manuscript.
Cyclical in what way?
Well, by applying the exact same sequence of subheadings, so path dependence, cross-channel divergence, increasing variability, and delayed recovery, to medicine, then to wastewater, then to economics, the text effectively resets itself at the start of each chapter.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, it successfully proves that the baseline altimeter tool works in three different environments, which is great, but it entirely misses the opportunity to escalate the complexity, or to demonstrate how different types of systems introduce unique, compounding frictions.
Okay, I have to push back on that from a purely methodological standpoint, though.
Go for it.
If the author is trying to prove the universal validity of the altimeter, isn't structural repetition kind of a requirement? I mean, that's just the scientific method, isn't it?
Well,
like, if you introduce a new diagnostic tool, you have to keep your testing variables consistent across different domains to prove the math holds up. If the author changes the structure in every chapter, don't they lose the baseline proof?
I hear you, but proving the math holds up is what a peer-reviewed journal article is for.
Ah, right.
A book requires a narrative arc. A reader doesn't need to read the exact same mathematical proof three times with just the noun swapped out.
So once you prove it works in Chapter 7,
the subsequent chapters shouldn't just repeat the baseline. They need to show what happens when that baseline math gets hijacked by increasingly hostile environments.
You're saying we don't need to be convinced the altimeter works three times. We need to see how hard it is to actually use the altimeter in the real world.
Exactly. So here is how we restructure those validation chapters to build cumulatively, using each new domain to introduce a progressively more complex layer of the distortion framework.
A ladder of escalating complexity.
Exactly. A ladder.
Walk me through what that cumulative escalation actually looks like in practice, starting with the clinical medicine chapter.
Sure. So as a concrete example, use Chapter 7, Clinical Medicine, purely to establish the baseline biological altimeter.
Okay.
Because the human body is a relatively clean system for this, it is constrained entirely by physiology. You map out the four proxies on, say, a patient developing sepsis.
Right. Because the body doesn't have political incentives.
Exactly. It just has physiological margins. This establishes the clean mathematical baseline.
Okay. I see where you are going. The biological system is complex, but it isn't malicious.
Right.
It isn't trying to hide the data from you. But when you transition to Chapter 8, wastewater infrastructure, you aren't just dealing with biology or physics anymore. You are dealing with municipal bureaucracy.
Precisely. So in the wastewater chapter, you move rapidly past the biological or chemical baseline. We already know the altimeter works there. Instead, you focus heavily on institutional distortion.
Institutional distortion? Like what?
Well, the author briefly mentions lab data delays. Let's expand that. The chemical state of the water might be degrading right now, but the reporting mechanisms take 2 weeks to process.
Oh, man. So how does the operator use the altimeter to manage temporal distortion?
Yes, the complexity escalates because now the system is mathematically sound, but the feedback loop is structurally lagged by institutional inefficiency.
The operator is suddenly fighting the system's own reporting mechanisms. The altimeter is dealing with ghost data, like signals from 2 weeks ago.
Yes, and then you escalate one final time in Chapter 9, Economics. Here, you focus almost entirely on narrative and incentive distortion.
Narrative distortion.
This is where human belief actively alters the system at scale.
Because unlike a human body or, you know, a water pipe, an economy knows it is being measured.
Yes.
And it changes its behavior based on that measurement.
Exactly. Goodhart's law in action. You show how the dashboard itself creates distortion. If the altimeter measures GDP or inflation indices and those numbers are made public, risk-taking behavior in the market artificially inflates.
Right. The act of measuring the system actually destabilizes the structural margin.
Exactly. So to recap the progression, Chapter 7 introduces the biological baseline. Chapter 8 introduces institutional lag. Chapter 9 introduces narrative manipulation.
That's brilliant.
This is just one way to solve the repetition, of course. But by building it this way, the reader isn't skimming. They are watching the altimeter survive increasingly hostile distortion fields.
It totally transforms a repetitive validation sequence into, like, a journey into systemic blindness.
Yeah.
And that progression, moving from a clean system to a highly distorted, human-driven system, I think that transitions us perfectly into how the operator is actually supposed to act inside these hostile environments.
Right, the intervention phase.
Yeah, because the author introduces the concept of Wu Wei in chapters 5 and 10, framing it as the disciplined application of minimal intervention, or action without excess force.
Right, and here the integration of the philosophical concept of Wu Wei feels decoupled from the precise quantitative mechanics of the core diagnostic tool, the altimeter.
Decoupled?
Yeah. The vulnerability here is a severe mismatch in tone and utility. The manuscript spends hundreds of pages brilliantly defining the altimeter with actionable, hard proxies, specifically input and output drift and time to baseline.
It's a highly technical dashboard.
Very technical. But then, when it comes time for the operator to actually touch the system, the text relies on Wu Wei as a qualitative abstract ideal. It describes it merely as acting lightly enough to preserve margin.
Oh, I see. You're saying there is a massive disconnect between the hard data of the dashboard and the soft philosophy of the intervention.
Completely.
Like, we've built this incredibly precise, mathematically rigorous instrument panel, but the steering instructions are currently written in ancient poetry.
That is the exact friction point. If the dashboard is quantitative, the intervention protocol cannot be purely qualitative. Otherwise, an operator under stress just won't use it.
I have to play devil's advocate here, though. Go ahead.
The entire premise of Wu Wei, which, you know, translates roughly to non-action or effortless action, is inherently philosophical. The author is trying to teach a mindset, a discipline of restraint.
True.
So if you try to map poetry onto a mathematical dashboard, don't you destroy the elegance of the philosophy? Like, can you even quantify doing less?
You have to quantify it, because as the text itself notes, doing less goes against every single institutional pressure an operator faces.
That's a good point.
Culturally, operators are rewarded for heroic, high-force interventions. You save the day by pulling the massive lever. You are rarely promoted for the disaster that never happened, because you made a microscopic, timely adjustment.
Right. Nobody sees the crisis that was averted.
Exactly. If you only give the operator a philosophy, the institutional pressure to do something big will crush that philosophy every single time. They need mathematical justification for their restraint.
So how do we give them that armor? How do we bridge that gap?
We explicitly anchor the concept of Wu Wei to the specific, measurable thresholds of the altimeter zones, transforming it from a philosophical ideal into a mathematically defined intervention profile.
Okay, give me a concrete example of how to lock that down. How do we make minimal action a hard protocol?
Well, define Wu Wei specifically as the operational protocol exclusively for the altimeter's early warning zone. Detail exactly what minimal action looks like when a specific proxy hits a hard threshold.
Okay.
Let's go back to the clinical setting. If the altimeter registers a cross-channel divergence between a patient's blood pressure and their lactate levels, say a 5% drift, what is the exact Wu Wei response?
Right. The operator needs to know, is the Wu Wei response simply observing without intervening? Or is it like a micro-adjustment of IV fluids?
Exactly. And more importantly, demonstrate how Wu Wei mathematically preserves the margin variable, what the author calls M, in the system's relational structure.
Preserve the margin.
Yes. You contrast it directly against the resource consumption of a forced decision in the critical zone.
Ah, so you turn it into a resource management equation.
Precisely.
So let's say the system's total available margin is 100 units. If the operator waits until the system hits the critical zone, a forced decision like intubating the patient or completely shutting down the municipal water grid might consume 50 units of that margin.
Which massively depletes the system's resilience.
Yes. And you compare that to the Wu Wei intervention in the early warning zone. Show us the math of how a micro adjustment of fluids only consumes, say, 5 units of margin.
Exactly. You show that Wu Wei isn't just acting lightly. It is a calculated strategy to protect systemic liquidity.
This grounds the author's philosophical intent in hard operational reality.
That's incredible.
It is just one way to solve the issue, of course, but the goal is to equip the operator with a protocol they can defend in a boardroom or, you know, during a postmortem.
It gives the embedded observer a concrete justification for restraint. They aren't just doing nothing. They are executing a precise, protocol-driven intervention based on proxy drift.
Right.
And this really bridges the gap between the primary and secondary prevention models the author outlines.
It really does, and it actually opens the door to another layer the author briefly touches on, quaternary prevention.
Which, for listeners who might not be deep into the medical taxonomy, quaternary prevention is the active, calculated decision to purposefully withhold a clinical intervention in order to protect the patient from the harm of the intervention itself.
The cure is worse than the disease.
Exactly. It's the medical equivalent of the cure is worse than the disease.
Precisely. If you map Wu Wei directly onto quaternary prevention and then anchor both of those concepts into the quantitative thresholds of the altimeter zones, the entire framework locks together perfectly.
Wow. Philosophy, medical taxonomy, and mathematical thresholds all become one unified language for the operator.
We've covered an immense amount of deep systemic ground today, dissecting the structural mechanics of a very dense, but honestly brilliant manuscript. Let's provide a rapid recap of the main points and the actionable suggestions for the author to implement.
First, we address the tone and style of the formatting. We need to consolidate the highly stylized stanza-like prose into cohesive, robust paragraphs.
Right.
This elevates the academic tone and ensures the physical, visual structure of the text mirrors the intellectual interconnectedness of the complex systems being discussed.
Okay, and second?
Second, we examine the structure and flow of the validation chapters. Instead of cyclical repetition, restructure the medicine, wastewater, and economics chapters to create a cumulative escalation of complexity. Use each domain to introduce a progressively more hostile layer of institutional and narrative distortion.
The ladder of complexity.
Exactly. And finally, completeness and focus regarding operator intervention. Anchor the abstract philosophy of Wu Wei directly into the quantitative zones of the altimeter. Transform it from a qualitative ideal into a mathematically defined intervention profile that preserves system margin.
These are sweeping, highly actionable structural steps, but implementing them will absolutely maximize the reader's experience and take a truly fascinating framework to the highest level of operational utility. We warmly invite you to apply this feedback, restructure the mechanics, and submit your revised work back to the show for another critique.
It is an absolute privilege to engage with material of this intellectual depth. The foundational concepts here are profoundly necessary, and we genuinely want to help strengthen the architecture so this framework can reach its full potential in the hands of operators who really need it.
To leave you with one final thought, when you are an operator flying through heavy, systemic cloud cover and the dashboard insists you are perfectly level, don't just blindly trust the glowing green instruments. Watch the sliding coffee cup. Thank you for joining us for this critique.